Hey, everyone. Welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we dig into the work of one actor through 10 of their movies. I'm Hemel. With me is Brian. This season, we are talking about Matthew McConaughey.
Hot mic. I have just learned that Hemel loves it when I say hot mic into the microphone.
Brian's a little punch drunk right now.
Yeah, I got the podcast in jimmies. I'm ready to do it.
Wait, we're really going to bring everybody down with this.
I got my cans on. Got the cans on my head.
We're far too upbeat for the film that we're discussing today.
Well, you know, I would say you're the host and producer of the podcast. And I'm just the co-host. So I feel like I have to up my hype game.
That's true. You bring the personality.
I'm the color man. You're the announcer.
I'm the play-by-play guy.
Hot mic.
All right. This week, we are talking about Dallas Buyers Club.
If you're listening at home and the mic is too hot, I make no apologies. What are we talking about?
Stop laughing.
Oh, because it's not a funny movie.
It's
very grim.
I think that Brian and I are probably, it's not hysterical, but you know how when something is so deeply sad that you react in very inappropriate ways?
Well, it's a very dark movie.
It's a very dark film.
It's maybe not grim. It's not, you know, it has moments of, it's a story of triumph in some senses.
Yeah, so we are talking about Dallas Buyers Club, 2013 Matthew McConaughey drama.
The Oscar award-winning.
Yes, mm-hmm. Oscar award-winning. Directed by Jean-Marc Vallée. I think that's how you say his last name. Mm-hmm. Please, if you're French, don't kill me. This might be the saddest movie that we've done, and this might be the most adult film that we've done.
Certainly the most. It's not an adult film, although there are a number of grimy, graphically sex scenes. I don't know that it's that. Yes, it's sad.
The subject matter is
about
really
people dying from AIDS, so yeah, it's certainly sad.
The subject matter is really intense, and but it's not hopeless.
Yeah, it's not a misery tourism kind of like, nothing could ever go right and wallow in the terrible sadness.
Well, I guess that we generally start with the summary of a film.
Yes,
so
for those who have not recently watched Dallas Buyers Club, like ourselves, what happens in the movie?
Ron Woodruff, played by Matthew McConaughey. This is a biographical film.
And loosely based on a true story.
And it really is about how he is a man in, you know, in Texas in the 80s, and he discovers he has AIDS. The doctors tell him he's got 30 days to live.
He's a homophobic, blue-collar, kind of a jackass, really, when the movie begins.
He's not very likable.
He's from a particular social class. He has a particular set of political and sociological values, and he's not real lovable.
He's what people say, a real piece of work.
He's a real piece of work, yeah.
And he discovers he has AIDS, comes as a shock to him, and their doctors tell him he's got 30 days to live. And what follows is starts with kind of his desire just to live. So he starts taking AZT because he's read that this is a new miracle drug.
Yeah, he's taking it illegally. He's like mm-hmm. buying it. It's not, he's like buying it from a hospital orderly and just taking it in bulk.
Yeah. And then he, you know, makes his way to Mexico where he meets a doctor who kind of gives him a totally different regimen that's better for his body.
Yeah, there's
actually
like this rogue doctor running some sort of clinic in Mexico, and he's got a completely different take on treating AIDS than the mainstream American physicians.
And so what happens in the film, though, is that he realizes that it works for him, and purely motivated by profit, in a sense, he starts a buyer's club. He starts getting all these drugs from physicians all over the world, from Mexico, and starts giving them to AIDS patients, HIV patients in the Dallas area through what I guess is called a buyer's club. There's a membership fee, and then you get all the drugs you want for free.
Yeah, to get around
FDA regulations.
That he can't sell drugs. He gives the drugs away, but there's a $400 a month fee to join this club.
Yeah, and really it is about, it is not even so much a drama that's about like medical corruption or FDA corruption, even though that is a strong undercurrent in the film, but it is his story.
Yeah, he believes that the pharmaceutical industry is pushing AZT, which is you know, toxic and destructive at the level at which they're prescribing it. He comes to believe in this sort of alternative treatment, and because he is not a doctor, you know, no one will really listen to him, and he isn't taken very seriously.
Yeah, but it is something that helps extend the lives of a large part of that community.
Yeah, the sort of the mainstream treatment at the time is, you know, aimed at destroying the virus, but is, you know, is such a powerful drug that it is really destroying the immune systems of the of the patients. And his altering take is, you know, you're never going to get rid of this disease, but these other treatments, you know, can prolong your life and give you a better quality of life.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, the movie certainly takes his side. They're like, oh, he's, you know, he's living a better life and he's helping these other people live a better life.
Yeah, there's a little postscript at the end that kind of tries to redeem AZT, that's saying that in lower doses, AZT actually did end up saving millions of lives.
Yeah, the movie takes a very, like, stark, you know, it's a movie, so it's like, oh, the doctors in the pharmaceutical industry, they're pushing this thing that isn't, you know, in reality, and I just happened to read up a little bit on it today, AZT was being prescribed in an unhealthily high dose at the time, simply because that's, you know, that's what they thought would work.
Yeah.
Later, they realized that dosage was much too high, and now AZT is, like, a main part of the standard AIDS drug cocktail.
Yeah.
So the movie kind of does make it, the movie makes the pharmaceutical industry and the physicians out to be probably more villainous than they really were.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm against the FDA and doctors, so screw those guys.
he does make the point, which I think is absolutely true, that, you know, the FDA is functioning very much as kind of the handmaiden of the pharmaceutical industry rather than putting patients first.
Right, rather than also just being about pure science. I think this is a great role for McConaughey. It is a movie that, while I really liked it, I don't know if like is the right word. I felt like I got a lot out of it. I thought it was a great film, but to me, it's a very difficult to watch film.
He won the Best Supporting Actor award, the Oscar for this.
Oh, he won the Best Actor
award. Oh, yeah, sorry. What I meant. Best Actor award. It is an acting tour de force. Like,
yes.
It is just, like, he lost, what, like 50 pounds? He's emaciated and haggard. And yet this character, like, this is the, you know, he's this huge, giant movie star. We've been watching his movies constantly lately. And yet I still, I didn't see McConaughey, right? I completely saw Ron Woodruff in every frame. Like, he became that character so convincingly.
This is probably the best acting that I think Matthew McConaughey has done. What did you get out of the film? I mean, it feels too simplistic to ask if you liked the movie.
Right, yes. I did like the movie. I thought it was, I was expecting, you know, I knew, like, oh, it's an Academy Award winner. A lot of times those movies are very, like, big and epic and heavy. And so I was kind of prepared for that. It was actually kind of a small movie, right? It's not really that grand in ambition or scale. And even the, like, kind of the, ostensibly the plot of, like, his drug business and, you know, his fight against the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry is really very secondary. It's just, like, the arc of this character,
right,
what he goes through. I think McConaughey really inhabits that. And I think I kind of like that the movie doesn't try to be, like, the AIDS crisis was this huge society-changing thing. It was deeply complex. It had its tendrils into all different kinds of social issues. And I think some people, you know, I'm sure people would criticize it for not tackling a lot of those things, but I think it's okay that it's a very small-scale movie set against the backdrop of this huge, terrible plague.
We have not talked a lot about stakes in this podcast, but there are the stakes of all these people who are dying of AIDS across the globe and in America during that time period. But this movie is very much concerned about the stakes of one man.
Yeah, this one man's,
this,
you know,
one
his
man's
to live.
And how he wants to live in the small community around him, which makes it feel very personal, very intimate, but also makes everything very real, right? Like, even in terms of when you look at kind of the way the film is shot, the makeup in this film, everything is sparse, unadorned.
Yes, and it's almost grimy.
Well, it's too real. Like, we are so used to this patina of, like, even in reality, and there's none of that in
too real,
in this film.
French name director.
Yeah, well, that's, well, the French love being
the
real.
The French love to be real. They hot mic, as they say, which means to be very real.
So Matthew McConaughey is basically in pretty much every scene in this film, but there are handful of other notable names. Jennifer Garner plays a doctor who eventually comes around to his side.
Yeah, she's kind of boring. I've never seen her in anything where she wasn't a little bit boring. No offense. She seems like a very nice person. And yeah, the role is not that interesting. She's one of his doctors, and she's like, you know what? He's actually kind of right, and he's actually kind of charming. I'm going to be his buddy.
That's not how she talks.
I don't remember how she talks, but yeah, like, that role felt very perfunctory to me.
I think he needed that. And then Jared Leto,
who won Best Supporting Actor that year,
plays
he's Rayon. Although at one point we realize that his given name is Raymond,
right?
And he plays a trans man, a very out gay trans man living in Dallas, Texas, in 1985. So people seem to really love this performance, and it, you know, it won an Oscar. What did you think about Mr. Leto?
I thought he was fantastic.
Really?
Yeah, I thought for when I first saw it, I actually didn't even realize that Jared Leto is how you say his name.
Well, agree to disagree.
I did not realize that Jared Leto was in this movie. And when he first came on screen, I was like, is that Jared Leto? He disappeared completely into this role. I thought that he was fantastic in this film.
I like that character, and he makes you the character is charming and believable, and you root for him. And his like the core relationship of the movie is Matthew McConaughey's character Roy Woodruff.
Yes, Ron.
Ron Woodruff, excuse me, and Rayon, who becomes his partner and eventually becomes his friend. And if the movie makes a big deal about how homophobic Ron is early in the movie, and he hangs out with this circle of like awful, hateful, homophobe asshole friends, and he learns to because the AIDS crisis is striking primarily gay men at this point, he really learns to appreciate them as people and get past his own hangups, and his relationship with Rayon helps him do that. And I didn't think Jared Leto wasn't delivering a good performance. I just felt like it's so heralded, and it just feels like he's like, he's kind of doing, he's kind of doing these gay mannerisms, and not in all a campy or mocking way, but like, it wasn't really that. Yeah, the relationship is important, but I don't know that it was that he was doing anything that remarkable.
So you thought it was like too much acting with a big A.
No, I think it's actually kind of a smaller, like, this movie is so much about McConaughey and his performance and his character.
Right.
And and his role, and Rayon is really only important as his friendship with, like, there's a few scenes where you kind of get a sense, like, there's a scene where you meet his dad and you realize his dad has abandoned him.
But you only see Rayon in relation to Matthew McConaughey, and aside from one brief scene where he talks to his dad and you learn that his name is Raymond.
Yeah.
No, I thought he was just fantastic in this movie. I think the one scene that really sold it for me is McConaughey is kind of just starting to set up his buyer's club, but right now it's still just about selling drugs that are effective to gay people, mm-hmm. but he needs a partner, and he approaches Rayon, and they have this scene where they're in the car, and I thought that scene, Jared Leto is not campy. He's actually kind of far away, so you're not close up on his face.
Oh, he's walking down the street.
And he's Jared Leto. Jared Leto's walking down the street. Matthew McConaughey is following him in a car, and they kind of had this negotiation about how much who's going to get paid. I thought he was just wonderful in that scene. I thought he was just fantastic.
The character's very believable, right? He's really tough, and like you believe that like this guy has been through what someone in his position would have really been through. Yeah, I'm not knocking. I guess I was expecting, knowing that it was an Oscar winning performance, I was maybe expecting to be something more.
Jeez, I don't know, man. You went like blood from a stone. I thought it was worth it.
I will say, there's sort of one scene. This character doesn't have a lot of his own arc. There's a scene where he goes to his father, and he knows he's dying. His father hadn't seen him in a long time, and he's like, oh, you kicked me out, and you were a jerk. It turns out I have AIDS, and there's nothing that makes me more like viscerally upset than, because this happens all the time in our life, right? Like a parent who has reactionary politics or whatever and abandons their child when they're gay or trans or whatever. It's such a shocking disgrace. It's such a failure of, like, you could land on the moon and be president and win an Olympic gold medal all in one lifetime, but if you did that to your kid, you're a failure as a person. It's completely unacceptable.
Yeah, there's nothing redeemable about that.
Yeah, and they don't try to make the dad, like, the dad gives him some money, but yeah.
Yeah, and they don't try to, but that just shows the time and place, but also that stuff still happens, right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
totally.
That stuff is still happening. No, I agree with you.
I'm sorry, that was an irrelevant rant. I don't know why I went on it.
Well, you're a father, so I guess it kind of hit home that way. This is just start to finish Matthew McConaughey movie all the way. This is like meant to win him an Oscar, right? You make this movie
yeah, for sure.
so that you can win an Oscar. And I don't mean this in... I'm trying not to be...
Not in a calculated way.
Right. I'm not trying to be callous about his performance because it was incredible and worthy, but these are the kind of roles that win people Oscars.
Yeah, whenever you lose or gain more than 50 pounds, you're gunning for an Oscar. So Jennifer Garner plays the nice doctor, and Jared Leto plays this sort of trans partner. Are there any, like, I feel
Steve Zahn!
Oh, Steve Zahn, right! The triumphant return of Steve Zahn to the McConaughey-verse.
Steve Zahn plays his...
cop friend.
Cop friend who originally is just like his best bros. They have like foursomes together, right? Like they're super tight.
They have foursomes together?
Yeah, there's that whole scene where they're having sex with two women.
That wasn't Steve Zahn. That was one of the jerk homophobe guys.
Which one's Steve Zahn then?
He's the cop.
Yeah, that's the same guy.
No.
Put on Netflix right now. That's the same guy.
The scene where they've got the two, I think they're hookers, and they're in his trailer.
Wait, there's... I thought that was Steve Zahn.
No! So Matthew McConaughey has one good friend, who Steve Zahn the cop, and then he's got a bunch of, like, co-worker bar buddies
who
are
all... Who's the guy that looks like Steve Zahn?
He's just a different, like, dumb white redneck. There's... And in your defense, there's two dumb white rednecks in that gang who look alike. And then there's also... Am I wrong? No, that's not Steve Zahn.
Is that racist of me?
It is racist of you, and I would... No, you can't be racist against jerk white men. It's not how it works.
All right, so Steve Zahn is...
Do you think I'm Steve Zahn? Have you been laboring under that misapprehension the whole time?
Wait, so those are two different guys?
They're three different guys. There's the two jerky, mustachioed white guys in his, like, coworker bar friend.
The same guy!
No, and then there's Steve Zahn, who, you get the sense that he's, like, a childhood friend.
Right.
They know each other.
And he's a cop.
Also, Dallas is a big city. Every time something goes wrong, Steve Zahn is there.
But wait, let me just say one thing. The movie makes a lot more sense now that there's a...
That character must have felt very inconsistent to you. Like, he's supportive and helpful in some scenes.
I don't understand why now he's really being nice to him, but then he tried to break his arm in the grocery store.
You thought that was the same character? This podcast is over. I apologize, listeners. You come to the 10 Movies podcast for insight, for commentary, for well-researched expertise. And here we are, unable to discern significant characters in the movie from one another.
Oh, my God. They look like the same guy to me.
The guy in the grocery store was the jerk. Ex-friend Steve Zahn is the cop whose dad has dementia.
Okay, let me just say that the movie makes a lot more sense to me now.
It does.
But yeah, Steve Zahn as a loyal cop friend.
Did you think that Jennifer Garner, the white doctor lady, was the same as that black woman that works for him, who's sort of like
Denise?
A receptionist?
I'm the worst.
Yeah, that's I can see why you you might have thought there were some plot holes there.
I just thought that one character was so inconsistently written that I couldn't.
Yeah, well, they do all have this like disheveled bowl cut and mustaches.
Like handlebar mustache.
Yeah. I think though, since we are talking about mustaches, I want to talk. When we did our Keanu Reeves season, which I encourage listeners to go back and listen to if they have not yet, we talked a lot about Keanu Reeves' hair because he was a man with not a lot of acting strengths. His hair was an important tool for him. For McConaughey, that's not generally so, but his hair in this movie, I could not look away from. It was so.
Wow, it was.
1985.
Yes.
Just terrifying.
It was horrible hair.
Yes.
And. But it was so probably of the moment.
That's what they had on their heads back then.
Yeah.
I mean, Jennifer Garner has, like, she would not be out of place working at, like, a nonprofit office today.
She had,
you know, just straight brown hair and a nice dress. But he was a man from another time.
That's how they were wearing their hair, I assume. But yeah, the whole, you know, just watching McConaughey in this film, it's the hair, it's the mustache, it's the fact that he's lost all this weight. It's a very physically uncomfortable experience.
And you know, so we've talked about something that he does more early in his career. He had a real go-to acting trick, which was goggle-eyed intensity.
Yes.
When McConaughey needs to, like, really let you know something's happening, he just, like, wordlessly bugs out. So Ron Woodruff is just... coiled. He's just the most intense guy at every moment. He's always ready to fight or run or shout or curse. Yet McConaughey does not ever resort to that like bug-eye trick that we saw him do in a lot of earlier movies.
There's a lot of actual physical acting in this film for him, I think. Not just the fact that he lost weight, but his posture and his movements and the way he holds his body. It's almost like he's uncomfortable in himself.
Yeah, this guy is a very like, he's kind of like... So the guy is constantly performing this like sort of like rooster, hey baby kind of thing. But you like the you see McConaughey, like Ron Woodruff is putting on that show for other people, and
right.
like, McConaughey delivers that.
It's just, I mean, he's just phenomenal in the film. I think that every single thing he's in is really good. But he does not lean on any of the stuff that made him so great in Interstellar, honestly.
Yes,
I think that this is a totally different bag of tricks.
Acting, you might say.
Yeah, apparently that's what it is.
What was the stand-up McConaughey moment for you in the film?
Before we get to the Matthew McConaughey moment, let's talk a little bit more about what skills that he's not using here or what he is using. So, like, the drawl is signature McConaughey, and he doesn't have to hide it in this
one,
right?
Yeah, he's playing a character from Texas.
It's all drawl. There is still in Ron the smolder, right? Like, he's definitely a sexual guy.
He's emaciated, and he has the most terrible hair and clothes, and yet he's still smoldering.
He's still trying to, like, get those ladies. Like, that's not going away whatsoever. And there's this tenacity to this character that's kind of similar to the tenacity that we have seen in Buster Moon and in Sahara, right? He's been told he's got 30 days to live, and he's like, you know what?
He's clinging to life with his broken fingernails.
Exactly. This is Buster Moon after the theater has collapsed, and he's like, I'm still going to go for
it. So this is sort of a Funhouse mirror version of the classic. Like,
yes.
McConaughey plays these very, like, optimistic, charismatic, charming, all right kind of guys. Ron Woodruff is not that, or he is that, but in a like a demented way.
Yeah, I like the Funhouse mirror side. Like, these are all the things that McConaughey generally has in roles, but taken up to like a very, I don't want to say taken up to 11, but very realistic, you know, very dark.
Yeah, McConaughey, especially like when you watch his romantic comedy, he's really like resting on this kind of easy charm. And
yeah.
This character does not have that. There's nothing easy about him.
No, and you have to work to like this guy, right? Like, he's not a very likable character at all.
No, and I like that the movie doesn't, like, there isn't like this like, dun, 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 the violins, and he's like, oh, you know what? Us gay guys are good. It's better.
Yep.
You know, there's never any of that stuff.
No.
There's one moment where he hugs Rayon. Well, you've seen earlier in the movie, he has this kind of like homophobic, visceral reaction to being touched by.
Right. Doesn't even want to be touched by a gay person.
I think that was the only moment when I felt like, all right, they're putting their thumb on the scale a little. Like, they kind of linger on that hug. That would have been a little stronger if it had just been like, if they hadn't, you know, like leaned into it quite so much.
You think that they kind of telegraphed it a little bit?
Yeah, there was a little bit of like, oh, there's going to be a hug moment, and then there's a hug moment. I think like that would have been even stronger if it had been like fleeting, more natural. Not even a hug, like maybe even just like kind of an arm squeeze kind of moment where you see that they've grown close as people.
Yeah, but the film, because it's such a heavy subject matter and it has the potential to be so just weighty and morose, like, I think that there's a lot of restraint with a lot of these emotional moments.
Yes,
like, they
it
could
is not
be
weighty and morose.
No, like, all of this could be, like, weird, weepy, bedside stuff, and there's none of that in here. Like, it's very character and story-driven.
Yeah, you're right. Like, there's a lot of energy in this character, and you're constantly like, oh, what's he going to do next? And is he going to, you know, and is he going to scream at somebody? And yeah, but like he could be like at the bedside of his dying friend.
Exactly.
And reflecting and rain on the window panes.
And it's just like, and none of that is here. So I admire that. So I'm willing to give them a pass on the hug. I thought this was a great,
I'm
sweet
also
moment.
Willing to give, you can have the hug. Filmmakers. I'm sorry.
So Matthew McConaughey moment. I've got a couple in this one, actually.
Well, yeah, lay it on me, sister.
There's one, which is peak McConaughey, where Jennifer Garner has come into the motel room that he's kind of using as an ad hoc office/residence. And Jennifer Garner is yelling at him for taking all of her patients because they've all quit her AZT trial and are now getting their drugs from him.
Right.
And they kind of have this like back and forth. And then as she's leaving, he, like, while they're having this fight, he's just flirting with her. He's like, do you always just wear white? You should wear more color. It looks good on you.
Yeah, his flirting with her throughout the movie is almost grotesque.
He just will not let it go. And I actually did not find it offensive. I thought it was actually weirdly charming. But he's just, like, she's yelling at him, and she's like, don't treat my patients. I want you to stay out of this. And he just, like, gives her a pickup line on the way out.
Well, and earlier in the movie, we see him as this womanizer, and we're led to believe that's how he actually contracted the virus. And later, he goes by fast, but you realize that he's actually impotent now because of the disease and the drug treatment. But so he's still trying to get her into bed, not for real, just as a matter of course. That's how he sees himself, as that guy.
Yeah, and that's just part of his identity. But that's just a very peak McConaughey moment. The other thing that he does really well in this movie that he doesn't do in a lot of other films, but he does a lot in True Detective, smokes. With, like, he talks with that cigarette hanging out of his mouth. That's
people are smoking in a hospital this movie.
I was waiting for a scene where someone was going to tell him to stop smoking. And I was like,
that's 1985.
Yeah, you could smoke everywhere.
There's a scene in the grocery store. Like, he's, yes. So early in the movie, we set up that he's very, like, in sort of classic, you know, redneck dude fashion, he's very quick to fight. Like, mm-hmm. he's like, oh man, you're going to call me, I'm going to fight. You know, just, you know, fists come up. Later in the movie, he runs into one of his, they weren't really even his friends, like, they were just, like, guys he hung out with.
Right.
And as soon as they learned he had AIDS, they started to, like, torment him. They're just awful people. He runs into one in the grocery store, and he's with Rayon, who's, you know, clearly a man wearing women's clothes, and this guy is viscerally repulsed by that. And so for a moment, the guy's like, oh, man, hey, haven't seen you in a while, man. Ron, how you doing, man? And Matthew McConaughey is totally, like, and you think he's totally chill. He's like, hey, man, he's all right. Yeah, good to see you. And you think he's just going to let it go. You think he's somehow become zen. But then he attacks the guy, right? He just, like, his arm. Yeah, the guy refuses to shake Rayon's hand.
Yeah.
He, like, twists his arm behind his back. And that moment felt a little hammy, right? It was like Rayon walks away. He's like, you did that for me.
Brian, you're dead inside.
But I do like the, like, how quickly the character
pivots.
Changed to this, like, you know, inappropriate violence.
It's this, like, quick temper 180. And McConaughey just, like, does it on a dime. It's really well done.
But so if you're Rayon in that moment, like, you're used to that. You live in Dallas in 1985. You're used to homophobic assholes. This guy, he doesn't even want to shake the guy's hand, right? Like, Ron is insisting he do it. And so the guy is a jerk to him. And then Ron, like, grabs him, twists his arm, and forces him to shake hands. But, like, I feel like if you were Rayon, that you wouldn't really even appreciate that, right? You don't need that shit, right?
Yes, you do.
Do you?
Yeah. What is wrong with you?
Is it because this jerk is being forced to recognize his humanity? Is that
not just that this jerk is being forced to recognize his humanity, but that somebody has his
Ron
back.
Ron is defending him.
That somebody, he has a friend who. So can you imagine how many times Rayon, in a grocery store, trying to just live what is inside of him, has been looked down upon, people just ignore him, have no visibility whatsoever, and then here comes someone that forces them to recognize here is a person and you will treat that person like a person. Like, I think that's huge.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I read that moment as like he's not even really being, he's doing something that Rayon wouldn't want to happen.
No.
But maybe you're right. Maybe
no,
that's what
I think that like it's one of those moments where I didn't really know it was coming, but I am glad that it happened because Ron doesn't really become likable in that moment because it's not like he suddenly thinks gay people are okay or anything, but he just thinks that you will not disrespect my friend.
Yeah, I like that he's like, the movie sets him up as this like very homophobic guy at the beginning. But yeah, he never has this dramatic, you know, he's not like in a pride parade all of a sudden.
Exactly.
He's just like, he has come to understand that people around him are people and he has this point of common reference with them. But yeah, I don't think the movie, like, it doesn't go too far with that.
No, and it doesn't become weird and preachy about, hey, here's a guy who hates gay people finally learning to recognize their humanity, right? Like, it doesn't lean on that at all, which I think would have made the film a lot less than what it is.
There is, you know, and so he's very capitalist and he's really, you know, in some sense he's preying on the gay community in that he's selling them these drugs. But he has their best interests at heart. He believes in this treatment. And there is a moment in the end of the film, if I didn't mistake it, where he's running out of money to bring these drugs into the United States. And he tells his friend, assistant, partner,
no, it's
this
his.
Woman?
It's yeah. It's the she like runs. She like runs the
she's
front
like
office.
The general manager,
Denise.
Of the
yeah, her name.
He tells
Denise.
Her to sell his Cadillac, and he's not doing that to profit. He's doing that because it seems like by the end he sees this more of as a mission than a business.
Yeah, and it's after Rayon dies, right? Like, there's a scene at the start of the movie where a poor kid comes to him. He's like, I only got $50. And
yeah, he's like, come back when you got 400, man.
Yeah, and you know, he's like, I'm not running a nonprofit, I'm not running a charity. But then he shifts overall when he realizes, oh, people's lives are actually at stake now.
I like that he missed Rayon's death. I feel like that would have been the weepy, morose, rain in the window pane moment. He's out of the country, he comes back, he realizes that Rayon, He does Rayon, right? We're saying this correctly?
We're saying it right,
He realizes that Rayon has died. And Rayon has this, like, weird, skinny, junky boyfriend who the movie does not, like, try to make you feel for.
He's just junkie.
In the shadows all the time. He's not real empathetic.
But it does not, I don't think that this movie, even though it does not give a lot of screen time to other characters, I never feel like it discards them.
Yeah, they're not caricatures. Or,
no,
yeah.
they just feel, like, very real. But
except
I agree.
Except for the doctor, right? So there's a, like, a attending physician at the hospital.
Yeah, well, that
Jennifer
guy
Garner's
sucks.
Boss. That guy does suck, but, like, again, the movie is full of, like, really realistically drawn characters. You probably could have had that guy fulfill his narrative role without having him so, like, overtly suck. Like, he's villainous.
I don't know if he's villainous.
Maybe he's just
a
villainous guy.
I think that the FDA guy is probably the most, like, villainous
but,
guy.
But the FDA guy, he's the most overt antagonist, maybe.
Right.
But, he didn't seem like he was, like, he was a bureaucrat. He didn't come down as hard on this business as he clearly could have. Like, he's a jerk. He's abusing his state power. But I felt that character was actually more realistic than this, you know, the sort of snivelly doctor.
Every other character, like, aside from maybe one or two, is, I think, handled really well.
Speaking of these other characters, who did you feel was the movie MVP?
Jared Leto.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's a gimme, yeah.
I think it's Jared Leto. And if I had to pick one that was not Jared Leto, there is... This movie's still very fresh in my mind, so if you haven't seen it, you probably won't remember this. But there is a nurse who works in the hospital... Who kind of is...
deep cut.
Yeah. She's the nurse who works in the hospital, and she kind of manages the information. She's just in a few little scenes, but there's a scene where Jennifer Garner tells this nurse, hey, take my patients down to this lowest level of AZT. And you can kind of see her smile because she finally realizes that they're doing something. Like, she has been discreetly trying to help Jennifer Garner this entire time.
Had I not just seen this movie last night, there's no way I would remember
that
character.
I know. But no, the movie, it has to be Jared Leto.
He's great. Steve Zahn, again, a small role, but yeah, I think the Steve Zahn character, despite the implausibility of him being somehow on the scene of every violent incident in the city of Dallas, I think he's a great, like, before you like Ron at all, Steve Zahn is the thing that makes you think, like, oh, you know, he does have this childhood friend, he is connected to this place. And Steve Zahn is sort of like, I'm just a good old boy cop, and, you know, I don't want no trouble. I want people to be safe. I think that's a tiny role, but I like that guy.
Yeah, it makes you like Ron better because you know that, well, if Steve Zahn likes him, then he might not be terrible.
I also like the secret Mexican doctor.
Yes.
There's the doctor running a clinic down in Mexico who's just like, he's subscribing to medical journals from all over the world. He's trying to do real science. He's down on the U.S. pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah,
there's a whole other movie about that guy.
Absolutely. But no, the movie belongs to Matthew McConaughey. So speaking of, where does this movie rank in the canon?
I feel like this movie is the pinnacle of the McConaissance.
Okay.
Like, I did not enjoy it as much. I enjoyed it, not as much as Interstellar. And I don't think it's overall as like fantastic movies Interstellar was. But I think, you know, he won an Oscar for this movie. This is clearly this is a McConaughey acting vehicle. I think this is probably at the top, if not very near the top, of the McConaughey canon.
I agree. My only thing about that is that this is very different from every other McConaughey role, right? Like, McConaughey is not a Daniel Day-Lewis, right? Daniel Day-Lewis makes, like, one movie every 5 years, and he's in, like, character for 4 years leading up to it.
But yeah, this is the
is total departure.
Yeah, in his other roles, he's like in his rom-com phase, he's just coasting on his persona. But even in his post-McConaissance, when he's doing more challenging roles, he's still using his persona. He's still using his primary acting strengths in better ways. But here, he's not. Yeah, like we talked about, he's not doing the McConaughey stuff at all.
No, he's completely doing something totally different. So I think it's top of the canon, but like a weird outlier because he doesn't do stuff like this.
Should we call it the McConaCanon?
Ooh, that's a good name.
All
I
right,
like
we'll
it.
Remember that for next time.
McConaCanon. But yeah, this is right at the absolute top. I agree with you. Peak McConaughey. He won an Oscar for it. This is like what you are supposed to want as an actor. A deep, meaty role that gives you a golden statue.
Hemel, what are we watching next on the 10 Movies podcast?
I have no idea.
So, listener, this is a dilemma here. We've really covered, I think, all of the most iconic McConaughey roles. The guy has a lot of movies out there. We talked about doing, what else is on our list? EdTV.
EdTV.
We Are Marshall. Free State of Jones.
Mud.
I've seen Mud. It's all right.
Dazed and Confused.
So everybody wants to watch Dazed and Confused, but we're sticking to our guns, not a McConaughey movie.
Apparently, from what I remember watching it like 20-odd years ago, he's not really in it very much.
Yeah, he's that was his breakout role, but he's in like three scenes. He says, all right, all right, all right, and then I think about High School Girls, and that's really it.
Well, there, we covered it for you.
Yeah, there it is. Bonus episode. Whatever you would like to see us cover here on 10 Movies, get at us on Twitter, let us know. We are extremely in it for you, so we want to deliver the kind of audio content that you have come to expect and crave.
As always, remember to rate and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Hot mic!
We'll see you guys next week.